Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the first movie in the Star Wars universe we've ever covered in the show, Rogue One.
Kind of wild. It's the first one, but.
Yeah, directed by Gareth Edwards, who we know and love from Godzilla 2014.
Is that the only thing?
I think so. Didn't he? Well, he did another Star Wars movie, didn't he? Or no, he was like visual effects or something.
Yeah, I think he actually got fired from Rogue One.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I think they did not like his cut of the movie, so they did a crap ton of reshoots and rewrites by Tony Gilroy.
Ah, so we could get the Edwards cut.
Well, I think he was he played ball more than Lord and Miller did on Solo, so they let him keep the director's credit, and they don't talk about the fact that Tony Gilroy probably finished this movie.
And Tony Gilroy hopefully got a nice check for doing the cleanup job.
Yes, just like Michael Clayton.
I wish I got that. I don't get that.
Michael Clayton, he picks up nice checks for cleaning up messes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, see?
Movie written and directed by Tony Gilroy.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so that's an incredible pull then. It's like a fucking knowledge and joke all thrown in.
Bourne Legacy too, right?
I don't know. I recognize the name, but I don't know where I'd know it from.
He was involved with the Bourne franchise. Maybe he wrote the Bourne Ultimatum.
Oh, okay.
If Jason were here, he could look this up.
He could, yeah. Yeah.
He would be right now.
I'm not going to.
By the way, shout out to Jason. He was supposed to join us. He may still.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you never know. Actually, he was coming in sort of as a bonus because this was just Eric and Drew Day anyway. So I felt blessed that he was going to be here at all. So when he said, hey guys, I'm going to be super late if at all, I was like, oh, okay, cool. And Drew's like, are you okay, Jason? Of course, we haven't heard anything since, so I hope it's not a very sad story. Beep! If it is, then there's my clear edit point.
Nice.
So, this is your pick. You're the Star Wars guy. I mean, all three of us grew up with the first three movies, and I have seen the second three movies, and this is the seventh movie I have seen.
When you say the second three movies, do you mean episodes 1 through 3?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't think of them in chronological order.
Yeah, that's fair.
I know I probably should, but the problem is this movie did a great job looking like it was in the proper chronological order. Like they made a point of it.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm the of the three of us. I don't know how I'm the one that ended up being the Star Wars guy. It seems so ubiquitous in our family growing up.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't hate them. It's just that after a while, I was like, yeah, I don't have any, I guess because, like, I was a Star Wars guy until George Lucas started to fuck with it and put it out again. And I think, that wasn't it, because I was still in for that. And then when, the prequel movies hit, I was actually even okay with the first one, but the second two were so bad. I know you're a defender for the third one.
Yes, the second one is bad. Is the worst of all of them.
Okay, well, I'm sure we will hit all of the Star Wars movies at some point in the show.
I don't know, man. I'd rather talk about some of the TV shows than the prequel movies.
Yeah.
So no, I would do episode 3 for sure. Did you see the special edition when he redid the special effects and re-released the original trilogy. Did you go see those in the theater?
I know I at least saw Empire Strikes Back in the theater, and maybe I just saw the other ones on video.
Because that was in the mid-90s.
Oh, maybe right? It was... Which one's the Rancor one? That's Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, so maybe I saw Return of the Jedi in the theater.
Yeah, so I have seen every Star Wars release in the theater since I saw Return of the Jedi when I was like 6, 7.
You actually saw Empire Strikes Back when you were very, very young.
You're kidding.
No, 1978, yeah. Yep.
When I was 2, 1?
Yeah.
I was...
I'm sure we didn't... we can check with Mom, but I'm sure we didn't get a babysitter just for you. Maybe we did. I don't know.
Probably left me in the car.
No, but yeah. I know Mom was there because I remember that was where I learned that California, for some reason, I don't know if it was just her idea or we were with somebody else or something, but like we made a big deal of like making a bunch of like popcorn and stuff to take with us to the theater, and the theater was not having it.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, no, it's fine. Jason's fine, by the way.
Yes.
Father Anderson lost his brand new Apple iWatch, whatever it's called, Apple Watch. Weeding Devil's Club at the cabin. For those unfamiliar with what Devil's Club is, I'm going to leave it a mystery because it's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay, so sorry, back to Star Wars for a second.
All right, well, I'm updating my personal lore to have seen every movie since Empire Strikes Back in the theater, except for Solo. I did not see Solo.
Okay.
Which, in retrospect, I'm kind of bummed about.
Well, maybe there'll be another opportunity, though.
Nothing like a pet making eye contact with you when they do something shitty.
Almost literally. You're the hardcore fan. I know that was very reductive of me. So tell me your relationship with this movie, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
When I heard about this movie coming out, I was pretty excited. I mean, this was right after Disney bought Lucasfilm and started making their own Star Wars movies. It appeared like after 20 years without a new movie, 20, 30 years without a new movie, that we are going to be getting a Star Wars movie every year, which is super exciting for me.
Yeah.
And this was the first non-episode movie, which is kind of nuts to think about. And so I was excited for them to do something different with this universe.
Now, where does this fit into the chronology of actually release dates?
After Force Awakens, but before The Last Jedi.
Okay.
And I didn't really know what to expect. I was I knew I was going to watch it, so I wasn't digging into the plot or anything. I did see some stories that it was a troubled production, so that had me a little concerned. But I didn't know anything about the characters, didn't really know anything about the story, and went into it as cold as I could, really. And I was blown away by, I guess, the audacity of this movie. Like, it took me a while to digest, like, what was actually happening and the context and the impact. So it probably wasn't until the second viewing when I really started to dig this movie for real. And watching it again for this discussion, I'm pretty sure I love this movie. I was kind of lukewarm to it the first time, but I love this movie. This is probably top 3 or 4 of all Star Wars movies for me.
Yeah. So I hadn't seen it until last night. I actually started it last night and finished it this morning. And I thought to when I woke up this morning, I'm like, did you fall asleep during a Star Wars movie? But no, I think I paused it on purpose because I knew it was going, ramping up for the climax. I'm like, okay, I'm tired. I'm just going to wait and watch the rest of it tomorrow. Yeah. You know, I wasn't sure what to expect because, yeah, I didn't know exactly again what they were doing, even though, you know, I mean, again, I watched it yesterday. So it's, this movie's been out for 5 years. And Jason's asking for a metal detector. Doesn't the Apple Watch find itself? Anyway, sorry. Not going to get distracted.
It'll get you close, but not exact.
Doesn't make noise or anything? Damn it, if I just bought him that night vision gear and the ghost hunting equipment, we could have found it with that.
There you go.
Although night vision gear doesn't do good. It doesn't help Alaska in the summertime, rather, anyway. So, anyway. Okay, sorry, back to Rogue One, because I'm ramping up to something here. So I wasn't sure what to expect. I wasn't sure, like, I think I'm a little bit guarded, especially when I start seeing faces I recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and frankly, when I saw Lashif and then a Ghost Dog, I was like, is this going to be a Lashif and Ghost Dog movie? Like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. But let me tell you.
Forrest Whitaker is doing some work in this movie.
Yeah, for a character. Well, anyway, we'll get to that part of it. But, I think I love this movie too. I mean, it's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but this is the movie that's making me excited about watching the other Star Wars movies, because this movie actually maybe for me makes Episode 4 a better movie.
I think it does.
You know, because, I mean, first of all, you said the audacity of it. And I read some reviews after I saw it, just to kind of see what the critical reception was. And because I remember the general zeitgeist was, yeah, it was good. It was a good movie, whatever. It was like nobody, it didn't win many awards or anything. But as it turns out, I love a movie where everybody dies. Mm-hmm. And how great was it that they made a movie where all the main characters die, and yet you end on like a happy note, a familiar, it was great.
It showed a lot of confidence to just have a single contained story within the universe. That's the shit I would get really excited about. Like, we don't need any more Skywalker stuff. We have it all. We've had enough.
One of the things that, you know, of course, Star Wars does really well, and it kind of appeals, I mean, some of this appeals to me, although it's not, I'm not universally sold on this idea, but I like gigantic universe stories, like where there's like a million characters and that kind of stuff. I mean, that sort of appeals to me if I'm liking the universe. Like, I don't have any interest in, like, as it turns out, Lord of the Rings. Sorry. I mean, I love everything about Dungeons and Dragons and almost nothing about Lord of the Rings. And I don't, like, I like things like the Star Trek universe, and I'm enjoying, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is fun. But I like the fact that you can drop in a story that maybe it makes reference to some stuff that's been talked about in other places. And so it's like little Easter eggs. Make no mistake, this movie is full of fan service. But it's also, you know, it's just like, a single kind of story in the universe that doesn't, like, there's one thing, one event, one piece of tech, actually, that ties a bunch of stuff together, like makes it part of the overall story. But you don't have to worry about everybody's kids, or this person's going to grow up to be this thing, or there's going to be a weird dramatic turn because everybody's dead.
Right.
I love it. I love that part of it. And even the goofy stuff, and I have thoughts, but even the goofy stuff, I think, like, this is all I wanted from like a family-friendly action movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is this is Return of the Jedi level stuff, especially when you talk about all of like the space battle stuff, which I think they did really well, and there wasn't too much of it.
Right. I think this is a better movie than Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still love Return of the Jedi more, because that's like, that was my Star Wars movie as a kid.
Sure.
So that will always have a high place in my heart. But I think this is a better movie than that.
This is a better movie than A New Hope, too, which is my Star Wars movie. Which, even though I'm disappointed, because as I was showing it to Journey, as she was a little kid, it was like, oh no, this does not meet the standards of new modern movies where pacing is an issue and you know, lots of like dead Aunt Beru is probably a bad thing.
But you have not watched Force Awakens?
Nope. I haven't seen anything. Like I said, I saw episode 4, 5, 6 as a kid, and I saw episode 1, 2, 3 as an adult. And this is the most recent one I've seen.
I think you would enjoy Force Awakens because it's pretty much beat for beat a remake of A New Hope, but with better pacing and a female protagonist.
Nice.
Which is great when you have a daughter.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, A New Hope might as well have had a female protagonist. Because it turns like that poor sexless guy and kissing his sister and stuff. But that's not Mark Hamill's fault. Yeah, exactly.
Super whiny.
Yeah, super young. Because, you know, when you talk about like, who is it? What's the guy's name, of course? I don't know. Cassian. I mean, Cassian is sort of the Han Solo character, at least in costumery, in this movie.
Are you aware that they're making a Cassian Andor TV series?
I was not aware of that.
I guess TV, like Disney Plus series.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's wild. Okay, so I guess that takes away from the fact that I don't have to worry about these characters anymore.
Well, I have high hopes for it because by the end of the movie, you have really warm feelings for Cassian, I think.
Sure.
If the movie is effective for you.
Yeah.
But if you remember what he was like in the beginning of the movie, he's not a good guy.
Oh, no. No, no.
I mean, he murders an informant because he doesn't want the informant to get caught.
Yes.
He is he's a ruthless spy.
Yeah.
And I think...
might have been an assassin, but for you know, tiny things.
Mm-hmm. So a series about a ruthless assassin / spy... who you're supposed to be rooting for because he's a member of the Rebels set in the Star Wars universe might really be a cool series.
It's like, oh, just like Mujahideen turns into Al-Qaeda. You never know what you're like, what? Okay, so are you ready to dive into Rogue One? Because as it turns out, I have thoughts. So
I can't wait to hear what you think about Saw Gerrera.
Okay. I don't, you know, so I have less thoughts about that than you might think. So, anyway, so Rogue One, first note, love the title, hate the title. Like, I love the title, I just hate how the title came to be. Like, as a throwaway sort of, it was weird. It took me out of the movie for just a second.
Oh, I love it. It's an action movie where they say the title of the movie in the movie.
Well, okay, it does tick that box. But the way they got to it, I thought was a little ham-fisted, let's say. However, okay, so I had seen...
We haven't even mentioned Riz Ahmed.
No, I'm getting to that. I had seen Felicity Jones, and she's pretty. So, you know, unfortunately, that still goes a long way in me remembering her name and all that. But when I saw Riz Ahmed, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm in. That's it. That's poof, boom. We're done. You know, I'm already like, it's already 3 stars just because he shows up in the movie. And luckily, he did a good job, because if he didn't, it would be disappointing.
I was excited about Ben Mendelsohn. He was great.
Yeah. Well, turns out there was actually a lot of fun stuff here. But yeah, so, okay. Movie starts out with Reacher. Dear God. Okay. The movie starts out with
research. Did you say Jack scientist. Reacher?
No. I can't say research scientist. And actually, why not just scientist? How about scientist? Or even better, engineer. Okay. So the movie opens with Galen Erso, played by Mads Mikkelsen, and his family are hiding on the planet Lamu when Imperial weapons developer Orson Krennic, played by Ben Mendelsohn, who we know from Captain Marvel, Ready Player One, and The Dark Knight Rises, arrives to press Galen into completing the Death Star, a space station-based super weapon capable of destroying an entire planet.
We didn't know it was the Death Star at this point, though, right?
I think I knew. I was pretty sure, because they talked about a planet killer, right? Or maybe did we find out that because when Riz Ahmed defects,
he mentions a planet killer. I think we find that out later in the movie.
Okay. Well, anyway, then we also see Galen's wife, Lyra, who's played by Valene Kane, not Lena Headey.
Did she look like Lena Headey?
I did. And then she's killed after she confronts Krennic, while their daughter, Jin, who is not played at this age by Felicity Jones, but will be played as an adult by Felicity Jones, flees and is rescued by rebel extremist Saw Gerrera, played by Forrest Whitaker. The best thing about this, and again, I think I'm actually a Forrest Whitaker fan. It's just that
he's great.
It's just that it's like I'm glad he wasn't on the screen for very long. Like his character is kind of important, but he's not on the screen for very long, which is good. He's got that weird shtick with the oxygen or whatever mask he wears because he's got some sort of respiratory issue. And of course he is missing his legs and stuff too, so he's been in some battles barely.
Yeah, he was actually introduced in the animated series the Clone Wars.
Okay. Which I heard is as good as anything in the Star Wars cinematic universe.
There's some good stuff in it. Probably my favorite character in all of Star Wars was introduced in that show.
And that is?
Ahsoka Tano.
Okay. No idea. Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's great. But yeah, he was introduced as, I'm going to screw this up because I'm not a super fan of the Clone Wars. I do think it's good. It was a couple of minor episodes where he was in, he and his sister were I want to say like helping. I'm not even going to try because I don't remember the details, but, his sister was killed. And that was the first step into Saw becoming really radicalized, which is why he ends up, as an older gentleman in this movie, he is an extremist. He's what the Sinn Féin part of the IRA, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I looked it up. Saw Gerrera has been all over the place. He started out in the Clone Wars, but he was also in Star Wars Rebels, which is a great series. Ended up in Rogue One. There's a sequel series that's I think it's airing right now, week by week on Disney Plus, called The Bad Batch, and apparently he's in that too. But I have not watched that.
So, you know, another thing is getting acclimated into the universe again, because I learned real fast that okay, so the Jedi are pretty much gone. I mean, I guess I remember in The New Hope, like you know, Ben Kenobi was sort of almost like a figure of folklore. And the Jedi Knights were pretty much like thought to be gone, right?
Yeah, not only thought to be gone, but thought to be myths.
Yeah. So this is already in that time, because this movie literally takes place like 3 days before A New Hope begins, which is again pretty great. So so we have this little confrontation on Lamu, where they tell Jin, the young girl, to hide, and they kill her mom and take her dad away from her, like any good Disney movie.
Right.
And then Saw Gerrera comes up, and Saw Gerrera shows up.
Gerrera.
Okay. Saw Gerrera, Forrest Whitaker, shows up and says, "You're coming with me, kid." Something like that. But in a kind of a scary way. Although, I think when not Lena Headey puts the little necklace on Jin, I thought, oh, she's going to be a Jedi, or maybe her mom was a Jedi or something. But no, never comes up.
There are no Jedi in this movie, and except for one scene that I'm positive was a Tony Gilroy tack on at the end of the movie, there are no like lightsabers in this movie.
Ah, okay, yeah. Yeah. Well, definitely no lightsabers. Yeah, except for, yeah. Although it would make sense because Darth Vader has a lightsaber, so it's fine.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is not a Jedi movie.
Oh,
this
no.
This is a war movie.
Yeah. Yep. And actually, you know, again, things are not going well for the Rebels. Which, it's so funny because, like, again, A New Hope starts out with that big crawl telling you, like, this story about, like, you're starting in kind of the middle. Mm-hmm. And then here's this big impressive scene with the spaceships and the like crushing the rebels except Princess Leia, blah blah blah, right? But yeah, this really ties it up. I mean, it makes the other movie better.
Yeah, did you even notice no crawl, no opening crawl?
Well, I know they had the opening thing, but yeah, I didn't really, until the end. And I looked at some reviews or whatever. Yeah, this is what, maybe the first or second movie that didn't have any crawl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fine, turns out. Mm-hmm. It also didn't have all, like, it had its own score.
Yeah, a really good one, yeah. Actually.
Yep.
A really affecting one.
So, and I mean, it could have used all of the other scores. I mean, there were some nods to, like, the Imperial March and some nods mm-hmm. to the Rebel songs and stuff, but nothing that, like, it wasn't John Williams coming in bombastically. So, anyway.
Was it not John Williams?
Oh, it may have been John Williams.
I think it
was. Probably.
I think it was.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, he peppered in, you know, some of the themes, like the New Hope theme and stuff when appropriate. But, like, I think Jen Erso had her own theme. But yeah, it was a great score.
So 15 years later, cargo pilot Bodhi Rook Riz Ahmed defects from the Empire, taking a holographic message recorded by Galen to Guerrera on the desert moon Jeddah.
these synopses you get terrible.
Well, this is from Wikipedia because the one on IMDb was like 18 pages long.
Yeah, so we cut from Jin getting rescued from Saw Gerrera to Felicity Jones waking up in jail, right?
Yes. Yep.
And she's eventually broken out of a prison transport and shown to be a pretty feisty character.
Yes.
But yeah, she's essentially knocked unconscious and kidnapped by what looks to be an Imperial droid.
Yes. Voiced, actually played, because he's all motion capture, but played by Alan Tudyk.
Mm-hmm.
Did by the way, did you hear any of like trivia or gossip or lore or whatever about Alan Tudyk?
No.
I mean, there's nothing scandalous or whatever, but Anthony Daniels, who is also in this movie, or mm-hmm. at least C-3PO is, no, I guess he must have been on set at some point because he was being super snarky about how Alan Tudyk got to walk around with ping pong balls on a pretty comfortable suit otherwise. And for 30 years, Anthony Daniels had to be in a goddamn C-3PO outfit in the desert and stuff. So Alan Tudyk was like, yeah, having Anthony Daniels say fuck you was like one of the best phrases he's ever heard in his whole life.
Nice. Glad to know C-3PO can be super feisty in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, I have thoughts about K2 also, but hold up. Anyways, yeah, so we got Riz Ahmed. And he's, and you know, again, the rebels treat prisoners, you know, just as you would imagine any kind of like guerrilla, rebel group.
I mean, we don't see Riz Ahmed for quite some time because
no, he's after, hooded and stuff.
After Jin is captured, turns out by the rebels, we get the introduction of Cassian, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't even know where he is. I forget where he is, but yeah, he's meeting an informant in an Empire-controlled city, to get information. That's where we learned that a pilot has defected and has important information, that he is on his way to Saw Gerrera. Yeah, and we see Cassian being really, really merciless and single-minded in his mission goals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because poor Tubby, is he an Imperial employee who's Cassian's contact with the bum leg or whatever? Or is he...
we'll never know.
Well, exactly. Yeah, whatever. He's got to get back to his ship. And he, well, I guess he must not be with the Empire because the stormtroopers are coming after him. But yeah, obviously he is not able to, he will be able to climb out of the maze that they have gotten themselves into. So Cassian solves that problem by taking him out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so Cassian escapes from the stormtroopers.
Cassian played by Diego Luna, who I really liked in this movie. I thought he was good.
Yeah. He had to grow on me again, probably because of his character, because you just weren't sure what his character was all about. But we know Diego Luna from The Book of Life, Milk, Frida, Dark City, and Y Tu Mamá También.
Dark City,
that's a
wild talk about that movie.
We should, yeah, that's a wild movie. Anyway, so
also, Book of Life, I've seen Book of Life about 20 times.
Yeah, I've seen it 3/4 of a time. Because Journey was too freaked out. We had to leave the theater.
No. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Well, I liked the 3/4 of what I saw. oh, no. You know what? I'm sorry. I have seen Book of Life. I'm thinking of Mama Coco. Coco, we took out. We left the theater.
Oh.
Book of Life, we actually saw, I think, on audio, on DVD or something. But, yeah. Yeah, that was good. Okay. Anyway. So, Cassian Andor learns of Rook's defection and the Death Star from an informant. And so, Jyn is freed from an Imperial labor camp at Wobani and is brought to rebel leader Mon Mothma, played by Genevieve O'Reilly, who convinces her to find and rescue Galen so the Alliance can learn more about the Death Star. Cassian...
Is she related to the actress, the original actress who played Mon Mothma?
I don't know. Maybe.
She looks identical.
This movie did some interesting things with CGI, too. At least she was CGI'd. But
no, she wasn't. Interesting. You mean bad?
I don't know. I mean, I thought the Grand Moff Tarkin, where we have Guy Henry and Peter Cushing face. It's fine.
No, I don't. I don't. Okay. I don't think. I mean, it's okay. I'll give you fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's fine. But I mean, this is just like a year or two before some amazing face graphics in the Marvel universe. Both of which are owned by Disney, Lucasfilm and Marvel. So I don't understand the difference. Why there's such a difference in how the technology is deployed.
Were they concerned about not being able to throw enough money? Because this movie costs a lot of money.
What? I mean,
I don't
know. Star Wars prints money, right?
Yeah, this movie made like, what, $1.5 billion. Now, granted, it costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But still, yeah. The only reason why $1.5 billion isn't like doesn't make this like the most gigantic movie ever is because Last Jedi took in $2 billion, or The Force Awakens maybe probably took about that much too.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Have you heard anything about the TV show The Mandalorian?
Just that it's universally loved.
Can I spoil part of it for you?
Absolutely.
Late in season two, a very well-known and much beloved character shows up as sort of a deus ex machina. And this is a character, the setting when it happens is, you know, what, 30 years prior to how old this actor is now.
Okay.
And so they de-aged the face.
Mm-hmm.
or maybe just completely recreated the face. But it looks terrible.
Okay.
It reminded me of those old like CD-ROM video games. It was just awful. And this is after, like, years after we've seen like the Robert Downey Jr. de-aging and the Michael Douglas de-aging in the Marvel movies. Which looked pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if it's a budget thing or a schedule thing, but it looked like garbage.
Did it ruin the scene?
It did for me.
Okay. It did.
It was a pretty cool scene. Ruined it. But like the kind where when this character went to go speak, they had to like change the camera angle to go behind his head.
Oh no.
Because they knew how shitty it looked.
That's rough. When you were describing it, I was thinking, you know what? So, you know, Deus Ex Machina is kind of like a, that's an insult, as much as a description. Like, that's like, oh, that's fucking bad storytelling. Except in a TV show, especially like a Western type, you know, I mean, it's episodic, not necessarily a ton of overarching story, maybe, although it probably does, because these days everything does. But yeah, that's fine. Like, every single episode of A-Team is solved by a Deus Ex Machina, I'm sure.
I mean, on a scale of 1 to Stephen King, it was fine.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Anyway. And by the way, look, I still a fierce defender of Stephen King. I just think after 1,200 pages, he gets bored.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Okay. So
I told you what we saw each other on Tuesday. I told you Amazon Prime was running a couple deals for like 2 months of a bunch of add-on channels.
I signed up for AMC Plus.
Oh, nice. I did,
yep,
too.
Yep.
Talk about Rubicon in the next 2 months.
We have to. Yeah.
And maybe Gangs of London.
Okay. Hey, I watched some Shudder movies. Because I think AMC Plus is $7.99 a month and Shudder is $5.99 a month. So it's like, well, I'm not going to, you know.
Did you kill your Shudder?
Well, the Shudder already died for some reason. I don't know whether the credit card I would auto-billed on was expired or whether it was I had like a year subscription or something all at once. But yeah, it's like the Shudder thing had already expired. So I was like, well, I'll just take advantage of AMC Plus, which includes Shudder. But you can't use the Shudder app, I don't think.
Yeah, I also got Paramount Plus.
Oh.
That has a couple things I'm interested in watching. It also has the new The Stand series.
Oh.
Which I'd completely forgot about even existed.
Yeah, I don't... Maybe I'd heard rumblings about it or something, but because it's not on, like, high visibility TV.
Right. And I was like, oh, cool. This has a bunch of people in it. This might be good. And I was like, you know what? No, fuck The Stand.
That's the problem. I'm
still mad about the book.
Yeah. I mean, there's some parts of The Stand that are so good, though. And then, you know.
Yeah, like the first 900 pages are amazing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's just such a master at making you care about all the characters. Like, I think I was telling you, I'm listening to Salem's Lot. And I forget how many little minor characters are there, but he, even if it's just a couple of pages, he kind of gives you enough backstory or enough like internal monologue or whatever so that you kind of get that character, not in a trope kind of way, but like, oh yeah, this is why this character is doing what this character is doing. And it's great. Love it.
I still think about The Stand almost every time I gas up my car.
Because that's how it starts?
It was a couple plot points where, was it Stu? Is Stu a character in The Stand?
Yeah, he's the main good guy, I think.
Yeah.
He's Gary Sinise.
he was trying to fuel up, I think, his motorcycle.
I think Larry had a motorcycle, if I remember correctly. Okay. I could be wrong.
Maybe Stu was trying to fuel up his vehicle.
Yeah.
And
I could be completely wrong.
Anyway, one of them hit this gas station, and he had a real hard time figuring out how to get a pump to work with no power.
Ah.
Because the gas was there, but the pump wasn't working. And the second one came along and figured out that he'd been in the same place because they were kind of following the same tracks, and was super impressed by the way the first one had done it.
Ah, nice. Yeah, I don't remember that actually at all. But
yeah, that one stuck with me, and I think about it a lot.
See? Stephen King, man, part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. I have so many, like...
And then I remember the literal hand of God.
Again, we should actually just talk about Stephen King at some point, just generally, because there's so many little things. Like, I love the fact that Stephen King, like, a Stephen King story seems like a thing, right? It's like Stephen King writes these stories that are Stephen King stories, but he's almost always doing it in the style of a classic author, or taking a, like, sort of an homage, not like a pastiche or whatever, but, like, you know, he has done the Sherlock Holmes type story. He has done the H.P. Lovecraft type story. He has done the serialized stories. He has done the, you know, every time technology has changed, he has done a story in that technology. He's done things just for audio. He's done, kind of told some of the same classic stories, but with sort of an updated feeling to them. You know, like, all, again, Edgar Allan Poe, H.P. Lovecraft, Arthur Conan Doyle. God, I guess all, if you think about the Dark Tower series, probably all of those Edgar Rice Burroughs and that kind of stuff, too. Yeah, he just appreciates, obviously he has read a lot, but he is also kind of writing like his heroes, which, once you figure that out, it's like both super impressive and like, oh, wait, he's doing a thing. it's like looking slightly behind the, like, figuring out kind of that, oh no, Harry Anderson bought that trick about, like you could go out to a magic store, and for probably quite a bit of money, you could buy that trick where you stick a knitting needle through your arm.
Sure.
That takes a little of the magic out of it for me, but also makes me impressed that, oh yeah, this is a thing you're doing. Perhaps that's all of my thoughts about Stephen King, so maybe we don't need to have a whole episode of it. I don't know.
We're done,
I'm
kind
of off the rails now a little bit. Nice. So I guess back to, let's see, Father Urso, Galen Urso, the Mads Mikkelsen character. So he is a, he developed the technology or whatever for the pointy bit of the Death Star. Is that kind of the thing? Like, he is the weapons designer?
I guess. I mean, it was unclear to me exactly how much of the Death Star he designed and helped build, but it seemed like a lot of it.
Well, it seemed like they thought he was key, mm-hmm. which is why Ben Mendelsohn showed up to go grab him. Yes. And that's some de-aging stuff they did with him, too, right? Or was he played by somebody else in the beginning?
Krennic?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Well, I think that was some de-aging. You're right. Yeah. I didn't even notice it. So that was okay.
Because I was trying to figure out who is this guy. But once he turned into Silver Fox, Krennic, then it was like, yeah, okay, I know that guy. Yeah, so he's something of a big deal. And he's an Imperial, like, officer. So the fact that
Krennic
he's all...
Krennic or Galen Erso?
No, Galen Erso, right? Like, he's gone off to be a farmer or something.
Oh, before he was... taken hostage, you mean?
Yeah.
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 He was.
Now, it must mention somewhere, like, why he left his job, right? Because he's not a rebel.
Right.
Yeah. But when they come into this planet where he's basically a farmer, and they take him by force back, and, you know, that's, again, that's what the Granny Garrett character does so well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When Lyra, the wife, says, you know, like, you'll not take me. And he's like, I'm going to take your husband. I'm going to take you. I'm going to take your kid. Like, I don't know why we're having this conversation. I mean, go ahead. Do your little speech.
They don't go into the timeline, and it's unclear to me. So it's 15 years when Jin is young. It's about 15 years before A New Hope, right?
Yeah.
So it's probably only 5 years after the fall of the Republic.
Okay.
Many of the officers in what became the Empire were actually originally officers in the Republic.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's entirely possible that Galen thought he was working for the good guys.
Huh.
Up until he realized, no, they were the bad guys.
And that makes sense why the bad guys will come and take him back. Because, yeah, you don't have a choice. Doesn't matter who we are now. You were part of us then, and we need you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, so does this make Jin's character? I mean, she's the daughter of Galen Orso, but what weight does that hold with the rebellion? I mean, that's just, again, it's like he's not a heroic figure in the rebel world, right? He's more like a notorious figure in the Imperial world.
Right? Yeah, they don't. Understand that he has been taken hostage and is doing this against his will.
Yeah.
He's the enemy.
Yeah. Yes, he's Werner von Braun.
Yeah, he is an enormous threat.
Yeah. So being the daughter of him does not necessarily buy her anything.
Right, especially since she's a known affiliate of Saw Gerrera, who also, even though they're ostensibly on the same side, is not very well liked among the rebellion.
Well, yeah, because he's on the outs because he's too radical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they grab Jin because Jin basically can get them to her father. Like, she's the way they're going to get into the door.
Yeah, and somewhere along the way, we like you mentioned before, we saw Riz Ahmed, the Bodhi, the pilot, is taken before Saw Gerrera on Jedha. And Saw is a lunatic.
Yes.
He is super paranoid. Yeah, he's super paranoid. He has been, he's seen some shit. He is, he's kind of the rebel analog for Darth Vader, right?
Yeah.
Because he's got the breathing thing. He's, you know, a huge part of him is now a machine. And, but yeah, he does not trust that Bodhi is telling the truth. He thinks he's a spy and an assassin. And so he's going to get to the truth by using Borg Gullet.
By using Borg Gullet?
Borg Gullet.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the weird octopusy thing, which also reminded me, no, sorry, not of James Bond octopusy, but it reminded me a little bit of the engineers in Dune.
Oh, I don't remember them.
Yeah, they were these weird thingies that, anyway, yeah, they're the ones that, I want to say they facilitated, the travel of long distances through space via spice, but they're these big squid looking guys.
Oh yeah. In the tanks, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Yep.
I can't speak about Dune intelligently either, as it turns out. So,
if only there was someone on this podcast who was really versed in Dune.
If only, if he wasn't on Apple Watch reconnaissance right now. So we have, again, in great Star Wars fashion, but also, I guess, it's just a common trope with this sort of thing. We have a little of the talk about the MacGuffin Kyber crystals, which it doesn't play a huge role. It's not like this is not a heist of Kyber crystals we have to worry about, which is good. But somehow Kyber crystals are how they're making the Death Star do its death ray.
So when you were watching this movie, did you have any idea what a Kyber crystal was? Have you ever heard Kyber crystal before?
No.
Okay. Do you know what they are now?
No. I mean, they're an important source of energy, right? I don't know. I thought they were like dilithium crystals from the Star Trek universe.
They are what power lightsabers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So a different colored kyber crystals emit different colored lightsabers.
Oh, so Mace Windu has the purple lightsaber just because of the kyber crystal color?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there are some cool episodes in Clone Wars where it shows like the Jedi younglings and how they get their kyber crystals and make their first lightsaber.
So do the different colors of kyber crystals have different qualities, properties?
I believe they do. I don't know what they are. I do know that if you go to the dark side, it will actually taint your kyber crystal and turn it red.
Okay. All right. But it's not like, so it's not simply a fashion choice.
Correct.
Is it more like a sorting hat Harry Potter sort of choice? Does your kyber crystal pick you based on your midichlorians?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. All right.
And if you ever see a white lightsaber, then I believe, yeah, I'm not a super Star Wars nerd, but I'm pretty sure this is true. I believe a white lightsaber is indicative of a kyber crystal that used to be red and has been cleansed of the dark side.
Okay. All right.
It's been like purified, essentially.
Sweet. So like through Scientology, it's gone through the purification rundown?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. It's gone clear.
Blessed by Tom Cruise.
It's literally gone clear. It's white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Also written by a science fiction author. So, anywho. So that's why Jyn is important to the Rebels. Not because she's particularly skilled in anything, but because she's the daughter of this guy that they want to get. And Riz Ahmed's...
they don't even care. They don't even care about that. They care that she can get them to Saw Gerrera. They care more about her connection with Saw than the fact that she's Galen's daughter.
Okay, see, that maybe I got confused or has just not remembered in the last 12 hours. But so they were going to assassinate Saw Gerrera via her instead of assassinate her father via her.
No, they knew of the pilot. Okay. Cassing found out about the pilot who defected, and they wanted to get the information from the pilot. And they knew Saw had the information. So they wanted Jyn to get them to Saw.
Okay. Because they couldn't get to Saw on their own because he's such a...
elusive character.
Yeah, there you go. Those are good words. Again, he's Colonel Kurtz.
Yes.
You've just made Saw Gerrera much more interesting to me than I found him in my first watch of the movie. Okay. So Jyn, Cassian, and a reprogrammed Imperial droid, K2SO, Alan Tudyk, travel to Jedha, where the Empire is removing kyber crystals from the Holy City to power the Death Star. Gerrera and his partisans are engaged in an armed insurgency against them. After narrowly escaping a number of Imperial stormtroopers, with the aid of a blind spiritual warrior, Chirrut Imwe? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Chirrut, yeah.
Okay. Played by Donnie Yen, who we know from John Wick Chapter 4 coming up. And also the live-action Mulan, Blade 2, and the Ip Man quadrilogy.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
I love Chirrut.
Do you know who's supposed to be Chirrut?
No.
It was...
Jackie Chan?
No, Jet Li. But Jet Li...
I'm glad they went with Donnie Yen.
Yeah. Well, Jet Li would have cost him $10 million, and Donnie Yen did it for $4 million. That's how that...
For Donnie Yen. Made.
Yeah. Actually, from all accounts, Chirrut is the most popular character in this movie, like by fans.
He is amazing.
Yeah,
the whole relationship with Chirrut and was it Baze?
Yes, Baze Malbus, played by Wen Jiang, who we don't know from anything really, or I don't know from anything really, but seems to be pretty compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, they could have their own buddy series too.
Yeah, they were great together. They had tremendous chemistry.
Yep.
They made me choke up.
Yeah, I didn't choke up, but yes, I agree with their chemistry. And it's funny because, okay, here's a couple points that it could have tipped me either way, and this is where Jason being in the conversation would have been interesting, because I could have hated K2, but I didn't. I thought it was fine. I thought he wasn't any worse than C-3PO, and C-3PO was an interesting character and kind of comic relief, and He reminded me a little bit of Marvin the Paranoid Android from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But
that's a good analog.
But again, this is like a family sort of adventure movie. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Also, Chirrut could have been like I could see it like cartoonish.
Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah, exactly, Rutger Hauer. Yeah, Blind Fury. Yes. Yeah, it could have been real dumb. But no, it was just the appropriate amount of both kind of fun action and fun humor. Like when they put a hood over his head. It's like, are you kidding me? which is actually pretty funny.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because there is no force in this movie, right? There's no force powers in this movie, except for the Darth Vader stuff at the very end.
Well, yeah,
he's but nice. you're left to wonder about Chirrut, right?
Yeah. Oh no, I until you told me. I mean, I just thought he was a Jedi Knight, not a knight necessarily, but he was certainly a follower of the Force.
He's a believer in the Force, but not a Force user. Because Baze makes fun of him for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you don't need the Force is not helping you. I'm helping you. That kind of stuff. Yeah. Okay. There you go. So instead of the Jedi Knights and the Force and stuff being an actual thing, they are merely like a religion based on myths and stories that kids tell their children.
Yep.
Okay. So it's interesting. So you could do a whole, I guess there probably is a whole genre of movies where Jesus comes back with a sword. I mean, Jesus played by Kirk Cameron.
Wow. Have not seen those.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure there it's not actual thing, although there's a lot of modern day theology that really lean on Jesus and swords.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Apparently there's plenty in the Bible that talk about Jesus as an angry man. Or at least enough of that that they don't have to dwell on the Jesus as the guy who's kind to everybody. Well, not everybody, the downtrodden, I guess. Anyway, but again,
I mean,
if Jesus is using the Force,
I read Lamb by Christopher Moore, and in Lamb, Jesus is pretty chill.
That's
so
true.
Yeah. I mean, that and the good parts of the New Testament. I'm going to go with chill.
Well, I way back in when I had a blog and my blog was stumbled upon by this guy who wrote, he was like this old, like maybe former preacher or something, or maybe just a super religious guy, but he wrote Vanity published his own, books that had, it actually kind of had like weird, well, I guess I won't characterize too much. And actually, I forget his last name now, but his first name is John. And I know his wife died of cancer a couple of years into the whole thing. But and actually, I think he and Mom like corresponded briefly for reasons I don't even remember. But one of his little books talks about how, one part that you forget about in the Bible or you don't or doesn't make the Sunday school coloring pages is Jesus performed all these miracles, right? But he cursed, like he threw a curse on something.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah. He cursed a fig tree. Like not like fuck you fig tree, but more like sort of the Darth Vader choke thing on the fig tree and made it wither. Again, I don't have enough context right now to speak intelligently about it, which is why I brought it up, because that's what I do. So, if anybody wants to fact check me on Jesus and the fig tree, let me know. Okay, anyway. So, we're rushing ahead a little bit because I do have my first issue is coming up. So, Jin and her group, let's see, blah, blah, blah. Sorry.
What do you think of the action, by the way, when the rebels attacked the stormtroopers in Jedha?
It was great. I like the action.
I thought so
pretty
too.
Much universally love the action in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was everything I wanted from, again, this movie was, it satisfied all of my needs for what it turns out I needed in this movie to get me back excited about Star Wars stuff, because it was, again, had plenty of little humor in it. So there was some winking and whatever, but it was also not goofy. Like, the Ewoks took me out of Jedi. Really did. And I know what they were there for, but, you know, that just... But this movie had lots of little things, too, and so much fan service. So many characters that were familiar and blue milk and everything. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm going to come up with this part here that's kind of took me out of it just briefly. So anyway, yeah, we have this whole Chirrut and Baze, who are buddies and comrades in arms. And so Jin makes contact with Greera, who's been holding Rook captive. Rook is Riz Ahmed, the pilot. And Greera shows her the message, in which Galen reveals he has secretly built a vulnerability into the Death Star and directs them to retrieve the schematics from an Imperial databank on the planet Scarif. By the way,
his name's not Bodhi?
It is. But Bodhi Rook, I think, is his last name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, this, by the way, like, answers a question that has always been, like, sort of a question about A New Hope, and that's, like, so you have this planet-sized thing, but you can just, like, there's a hole in it that if you shoot it, you can destroy the whole thing? Seems like a design flaw. But.
Yeah.
Turns out.
That never bothered me.
And I think it's actually explained, right? I think there's probably at the very end, there's at the Rebel Command or whatever, they talk about what the vulnerability is.
Yeah, well, I think it just says that the stolen plans have identified this vulnerability.
Yeah.
I don't know that they go into detail about why.
Oh, no, I don't think, I think you're right. Yeah.
This is one of those things that, you know, the kind of pedantic fans would complain about never bothered me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it is what it is.
Sure.
The fact that they wrote a whole movie to explain it, if I had known that this is what the movie was about, I might have rolled my eyes so hard that I wouldn't have been able to actually go watch the movie.
Ah.
So I'm glad I didn't know that. But after seeing it, I mean, it's great. What they did with it to answer the question that I didn't think needed an answer was great.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was so skillful. And yes, as soon as Jin started, you know, talked he was remembering what her mom said, I think, and then repeating all this talk about hope, like rebellions are built on hope. Like, I saw that coming. It's like, oh, yeah, this is not a mystery. They're going to somehow tie it into New Hope. I was just happy that the lady in Carrie Fisher face didn't actually say, you know, when they asked what this was, and she's like, A New Hope. Trademark. Although she almost did. She said it with hope.
Almost. Yeah.
But still. But that made me smile. I was happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah. So we have this again. So now they have to retrieve the schematics from an Imperial databank on the planet Scarif. Now, on the Death Star, we have Grand Moff Tarkin that shows up, basically saying, like, what the fuck are you doing? We want a test of this thing. You know. Like, this is probably cost overruns on this whole deal. We need some evidence that it works. Blah, blah, blah. So this is where Krennic orders a low-powered test shot that destroys the holy city of Jeddah.
Well, yeah. Tarkin is giving Krennic a hard time. But if you remember in the beginning of the movie, when Krennic is recruiting Galen back into the fold because the project is hopelessly behind schedule and they can't figure out how to make it work. And that was 15 years ago at this point.
I'd be willing to bet that the software used to organize and control all of the very, very complicated and numerous systems aboard the Death Star.
It's SAP?
Yes, exactly. It's an SAP. It's the SAP Enterprise software.
Sorry, I stepped on your joke.
No, it's perfect. Yeah, you saw where I was going. So, anyway. So, they do this test of the Death Star's ability, and they decided, instead of blowing up Jedha, that, no, you don't need to blow up Jedha. Well, there was some line that, like, you didn't have to do the whole thing, you just had to do a little bit. Something like that. I don't know.
One reactor.
Yeah. So they took out in a very impressive style, sort of an apocalyptic sort of thing, about the city at least. And of course, everybody in there, like this is where Guerrera meets his fate. Because as we're about to learn, everybody in this movie is gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome. Love that.
It's only the good guys.
Well, okay, yes, there are a couple. Actually, there are a couple good guys live, a couple bad guys live. Not it's not Halloween 3, but still. So they do this whole thing, and I mean, I'm yada-yadding all the cool action scenes and the special effects and all that, and having all the main characters, except for Guerrera, pretty much escape at the last minute from the Holy City. But, of course, Grand Moff Tarkin, Peter Cushing face, congratulates Krennic on the success, and then also says, "And I'm taking over." So Krennic is not happy about that. And also, Krennic is summoned by Darth Vader.
Stomps his feet like a brat.
Yes.
Is he summoned by Vader, or does he go to Vader to whine and to snitch?
Maybe. Let's see. So the synopsis says, afterward, Krennic is summoned by Darth Vader to rationalize the Death Star's attack on Jedha. Krennic seeks his support for an audience with the Emperor, but instead Vader force chokes him and orders him to ensure no further breaches occur.
That's not what happened.
Okay. All right.
That's not what happened.
So what happened?
He goes to Vader to complain that Tarkin took it from him, and Vader tells him that there have been security breaches and he needs to close those breaches if he wants to maintain command of the Death Star. So Krennic says, if I do that, you'll talk to the Emperor for me. And that's when Vader chokes him with a really snarky line for Vader.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Was that the thing that you were...
Yes. Well, two things. One thing that turned out to be explained. One is that I didn't like Vader's costume. Probably because it was too well lit. But it just looked a little janky. And it has to do with the fact that, like, but, you know, the Vader costume in A New Hope is slightly different than the Vader costumes in the movies since. Because Vader costume gets kind of an update where it looks more put together. And because the first, like, the Vader helmet thing just kind of is plopped on this, like, his KP uniform thingy. And so, like, you see the seam or where the helmet ends. And then the other things, like his cape or whatever comes around and it's a little bit more all put together, like it's one big thing. Anyway, small thing, but it's like, oh, this looks a little bit more like a Party World mask than I'm used to in a Star Wars movie. But again, it was fine. And also, so the thing about, and maybe time is my problem, and context, because, you know, to me, Darth Vader doesn't crack wise. Like, he doesn't say, like, after he force chokes this guy, he didn't say, be careful not to choke on your aspirations, director. It's like, no. Vader just fucks you up and walks away.
The Roger Daltrey scream and put the sunglasses
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, that's perfect way of putting it. Because, yeah, that's not, like, Vader is like the Vader at the end of this movie or in the beginning of New Hope, where he just comes in, takes no shit from anybody, the only charisma he has is that he's so fucking badass.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to sit down with you and over drinks tell you a story about the old days. Vader comes in, he does his shit, and he leaves.
Yeah, that's the only moment in any of the movies where he drops a one-liner. Like, even as Anakin, he's not charismatic, like you said. He even before he's Lord Vader, he You know, he's whiny. He's emo. That's what he is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's always emo.
Exactly. Yeah. And the only reason, again, he's not charismatic. It's the perfect way of putting it. The reason he is such a big presence is because he is just such a badass and so dangerous. Like everybody is scared of Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Clone Wars animated series does a really good job of fleshing out the character of Anakin Skywalker in a way that is charismatic and in a way that really feels like a significant tragedy when he turns. But yeah, that's not in the movies.
No.
None of that's in the movies.
Yeah, and again, there's something about a villain I like about that, you know?
Yeah,
it just appeals. Pure. Yeah, it's like you were coming here to wear the black hat, and I don't mm-hmm. want to think too hard about your motivations except for being a villain,
right?
But again, it's just nitpicking there. But yeah, that was the one part that I was like, no, come on, Darth Vader doesn't like. Yeah, yes, David Caruso is the perfect fucking example for this. Okay, so sorry, back to the movie. So we have this whole thing where. So Bodhi leads the group to the Imperial Research Facility on the planet Edu, and Krennic also arrives, determined to identify the traitor whose leak led to his demotion, still unaware it was Galen. Cassian is actually instructed to, instead of to, like, I guess, make contact with Galen or snatch him or whatever, his chance is, no, we're not going to rescue him or whatever, you're just going to assassinate him.
Yeah, this is while... Jin is trying to convince them that based on the message that she's the only one who has seen, the message from Galen identifies this flaw.
Yes.
And so she's imploring him to get information from Galen, not so that they can destroy the Death Star. And he doesn't believe her.
Yes.
And we haven't really talked about Felicity Jones that much, but I think she's really great in this movie.
Oh, me too.
She's given several sort of melodramatic monologues, and she lands them in a way that, it would have been really easy to misfire. I mean, she gets all emotional talking to Saw about how he abandoned her. And then later she has she's got the speech at the Rebel base, and then even later than that, when they're on Scarif, she has to give another speech to the troops before they are all going to go to their deaths. And she does a really good job at that. She exudes charisma.
Yes.
Even though she is being, for the first part of the movie, she's being dragged into this thing she wants no part of.
Oh yeah. And she's not.
She goes from being a cynic to being the one who has to convince the rebellion that the rebellion is founded on hope.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think she's great in this movie for sure. And because, again, we don't have a lot of time to dwell on it so much. That's the other thing in this movie. I thought the pacing, even though it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, okay, I still mm-hmm. think the pacing was really good in this movie. There weren't long extended periods that drug the movie down like some of the prequel movies, let's say.
Yeah. No, this movie cooks.
Yeah. And yeah, they managed to shove in a lot of stuff. Like I said, a lot of fan service, but that is fine by me. I'm a fan, as it turns out, right? I mean, these things like, oh yeah, I guess when Cassian and somebody else, I can't even remember where this was, but they bumped into a couple of guys during a big crowd scene. And the guy's like, hey, watch where you're walking or whatever, right?
They were the ones who were going to show up in the bar on Tatooine, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I was good with just about everything except C-3PO and R2-D2.
Except that it makes
they
sense.
Felt, that's it. They felt really shoehorned in.
Oh, but they were. I mean, you had to get to that point, right? Because theoretically, I mean, I guess they could have been, if you were to shoehorn them in, you could shoehorn them in right at the very end. Except that they don't know Princess Leia or anything.
They do.
Does Leia have a relationship with R2-D2? Oh, are they her droids? Okay. All right. I mean, I know Leia uses R2 as the vessel for the message, but...
Yeah, I mean, Anakin built C-3PO.
Well, yeah, there's that. God damn it. I hate all of that. That and the midichlorians, go fuck yourself. Yeah, and yet, I'm in for the pod races, so, you know, it's...
R2-D2 is also Anakin's, navigation droid through for all of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, yep, yep, yep.
So, when you saw Bail Organa, did you know who that was?
No.
Jimmy Smits?
Well, okay, yeah, I mean, I remember that he was in those movies, but I don't remember mm-hmm. anything about it. Like, how is he related to Princess Leia?
He's her father.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Like, her adopted father.
Okay, yes.
Because after the twins were born, they were split up. Luke, they hid him by keeping the Skywalker name and sending him to go live with, Anakin's brother?
Yeah.
Stepbrother?
Something like that.
That's how he'd stay hidden for 20 years. It's perfect sense. And then they took the girl, and she was adopted by Senator Organa, who was also royalty, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's very complicated. So
when he's sort of winking and saying, "Oh, there's someone I know who I can trust."
Yes.
I thought they were just going to reference Leia, not actually show her.
Oh yeah, I didn't expect her to show up.
Yeah, even at the very end when they showed her from the back, I thought that was going to be it. Yeah. I did not expect to see her face.
And did you not like the face?
The first time I saw it, I was so surprised. And it didn't linger too long that it was fine. I thought it was pretty cool. When you're expecting it and you can study it a bit more, it's not great.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's fine.
Well, okay. But for me, if you can deal with Riz Ahmed being mind molested by a squid, then seeing, Grand Moff Tarkin or Princess Leia's face being a little weird, it's fine by me. I'm good to go.
She didn't bother me nearly as much as Tarkin.
Yeah, no, that was that. By the way, some of the critics were saying that actually the Tarkin thing was just a little weird, but they were really upset about the Leia thing. It's like, why? Come on, man. Anyway, this is when did Carrie Fisher die? This is right after that, right?
No, it was before.
Oh, it was before she died? Okay.
Right. Yeah, I was just about to say, if this had been after she died, that would have been probably in very poor taste.
Okay. I thought she died
between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker.
Okay, all right. So, let's see. Blah, blah, blah. We've got, basically, so this is all coming up to this. This is now kind of a heist movie. Where they're getting the secret files of the vulnerability of the Death Star, and they've got to go and do this sort of Mission Impossible routine where they have to, I thought it was a little bit unnecessary.
There's a really tough scene to watch where the Rebellion just bitches out.
Oh yeah, so as far as
it was like, no, this is too hard.
Yeah.
We're going home.
Like, there's that, sure. Yeah.
That's why they're Rogue One, because
they stole the ship, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, they stole their ship. It was essentially a mutinous crew.
Yeah.
And they're going on their own to conduct this mission, which is not authorized or supported.
They pulled a Guerrera.
Yeah. Yeah. And, the Rebellion is over at this point. They're all going to go into hiding.
And yet, we have one hero emerges.
And his name is K2SO.
It turns out he gave his life so that everybody else can be free. Yeah.
That made me really sad.
when K2SO takes it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It could have been, you know, I could see, again, I worry about what Brother Jay thought about this, but I could see it was if it'd be like, oh, come on. And of course, Jason's message before was his one talking point was why there was no friendly fire. Like, Star Wars has a very, it's a very loose rules about what happens when you get hit by a blaster gun or whatever.
Laser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on who gets hit and when they get hit and how it needs to happen in the plot, that's what happens. And there's a lot of blaster fire where nobody gets hit by anything. It's a Star Wars, it's a Stormtrooper joke.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
My favorite running gag in the Star Wars movies is how Leia never misses.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, never.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, everybody else is just praying and spraying the whole time.
Yep.
You know, it's funny. Another thing that could have just been dumb was, and they spent some time and money on this part of it. They, I guess, who was it? It must have been the director who found or queried about, hey, what's this stuff in this box? And they're like, yeah, that's like original film from A New Hope, and so they clean a lot of it up, and they used it like some of the pilots of the like the Y-wing and stuff are all mm-hmm. like just thrown in there, sometimes being revoiced, but sometimes being just kind of like plopped in through CGI, but otherwise, you know, it all looked really good. It made sense, and they also took the time to dumb down like all of the like the controls and also the kind of the janky computer screen or you know the whole kind of like Atari level graphics on all the navigation equipment and stuff. They were true to all that. They didn't make it look whiz bang because this wouldn't have been whiz bang.
Right. Yeah. This movie looked great.
Yeah.
All of it looked great. And yeah, the scenes, like whenever they were taking off from Yavin 4,
mm-hmm.
it was really evocative of New Hope.
Yeah. In the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
And when they used the Hammerhead Corvette to destroy the Star Destroyers, great. Loved it. You know, they had the shield gate or something, right? Mm-hmm. Cool, whatever. And again, even the weird like Mission Impossible gonna go grab the secret data from the computerized what
archive?
Yeah. Kind of like the supercomputer system that they had to I think it was right from a Mission Impossible movie, right? Or maybe it was one of the James Bond movies too. I don't know.
It was sort of an amalgam of getting the knock list from the computer room.
Yes.
And the fight scene in the multi-story car park.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's, you know, again, I didn't mind any of that. It actually kind of echoed some of the running around from A New Hope. Mm-hmm. Although nobody had to go into the garbage area, which is nice, the trash compactor. By the way, maybe one of the funniest things in any movie in my childhood is when C-3PO says, "Oh my God, they're dying!" after they're like whooping when R2 mm-hmm. stops the compactor. Super yes. funny. Love that. Love that stuff. Anyway, so. Yeah, we've got this whole deal. Oh, and I love the fact that we've the first time we see that the Death Star actually has the hyperdrive or whatever, which would make sense. So you don't see it kind of emerge like you see the ships, but it's like, oh yeah, what's that thing?
I love that effect of it just kind of slowly showing up on the horizon.
Yeah, great. Love it all.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Scarif was beautiful.
Oh yeah. There's a little piece of trivia why it's called Scarif.
No, what does that mean?
It's because Gareth Edwards, the director, when he got they go to Starbucks to get coffee, and one of the baristas kept calling him Scarif, like Scarif instead of Gareth.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I don't know whether that's true or not, but it makes me laugh to think so. But yeah, I mean, and you realize at this point,
yeah,
there is no way out for these characters. Jin is going to die. You know this like 15 minutes before the movie's over.
Maybe, yeah, maybe it's not looking good.
Yeah,
it's not looking good. Yeah, all of the characters who we've come to know, just like, you start ticking them off.
Yeah.
You got K2, you got Bodhi,
mm-hmm.
you got Charut and Baze.
Mm-hmm.
They are all going down.
So what did you think about Bodhi taking the version of the, what is it, 8th inch or 3.5 millimeter plug and plugging it into the tower?
I loved it.
Yeah, me too. I loved it. So much fun. And just the goofy part of it, like how like it got tangled or whatever, and he didn't have enough room to like maneuver it in there. And of course, mm-hmm. it's like, well, we need to get to, what is it, the master switch. Like, what the fuck is a master switch? What are we looking for? Like, yeah, it's over there. So, too funny. But good. Again, it worked. This movie worked for me. I love this movie from start to finish. Like I said, I love the fact that everybody dies at the end, at least all the good guys, but that you still, again, I saw the hope thing coming, and when they finally put a button on it at the end, I was happy she didn't say it was a new hope, because that would have been like mm-hmm. a line too far, but the fact that she said that this represents hope, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, all of the action in like the last, 30 minutes of this, 45 minutes of this movie?
Yeah,
like maybe. From when they land at Scarif on is like, it is such a joy to watch, because there's so much stuff going on and there's so many different little touches that just really land and hit home. Like how terrifying the AT-ATs are.
Yeah.
When when you're at the ground level from the perspective of a single soldier and you mm-hmm. see one coming through the trees. And like the joy you feel when you've got the X-Wing fighters coming in from out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Cause a couple of them made it through the gate before it closed. And the sad goodbye for Charut and Baze.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff landed.
Yeah.
Like you said, the space battle, they didn't linger up there, but you know what they did show was very effective.
Yeah, it would look great on a big screen.
It did. Yeah, I remember very clearly when I was watching the theater, being very shocked that they showed the one pilot not making it through the gate and becoming the bug on the windshield.
Yeah,
that was very jarring.
That was Red 5, right? Or Red Leader, one of the two. Yeah,
I don't remember
because I think it was Red 5 because that isn't Luke Red 5 in the A New Hope.
Oh, I don't know.
I think so. I could be wrong.
I didn't connect those dots. There is supposedly an Easter egg which I have not verified, haven't tracked down, but the main ship from Star Wars Rebels is a very unique looking ship.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be in the Attack Force, in the Battle of Scarif, which would be cool to see.
Yeah. Do you remember, I remember it being a very difficult game, but a computer game, I think it was like Star Wars X-Wing, where it was
I never played it.
Yeah, it must have been a LucasArts Mat game, and I remember because you could fly a B-Wing, and some other more exotic, X-Wing, Y-Wing, and then there were all these other little crafts you could do, and you could actually, at a certain point, you could actually like make a run of the Death Star, and I'm sure the graphics were super low res. This is
sounding vaguely familiar, yeah.
But you had to go through some of these like tutorials to prove that you could pilot like the crafts, and it involved kind of like basically like flying through rings and stuff. But it was hard. Like, if I remember correctly, there was some skill that you needed so I never really like mastered the game or anything. But I just remembered like that kind of stuff was fun. Like to see whatever that I'm sure it has a name and all sorts of lore behind it, but like where the admiral ship that came in and was like, you know, the big blimp looking thing with the thingy hanging out from it. Yeah, that thing has a name and it's got all, you know, it's got a bunch of capabilities that other things don't have. And like X-Wings are for a particular thing.
Well, back in the day, the toys were our Wikipedia.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yep.
Like you would buy the toy and it would come with a little write up and it would give you like the backstory and the detail. And
yeah, that's how you knew who the walrus guy was.
Yeah, that's how you learned about all the details.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Yep. Oh, and like trading cards and stickers and shit. I mean, ugh.
Yes.
Man, what brilliant merchandising went behind that series.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the beginning of the end for anything pure, but oh well. Don't matter. It was great. I remember we had a Death Star, like maybe, I don't know. It wasn't Tarkin. It was just maybe some like minor figure on the Death Star with like one of those black helmets, a sticker on our front door for a while, like years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next to Han Solo.
Yeah. Crazy.
Sort of ripped in half.
Yes.
I think we tried to take it off.
Yeah. Oh, the good old days.
I think it remained on the door forever until they got a new door.
Oh, they might have. Yeah, actually. so silly. Anyway. So, thoughts about...
We skipped over the terrifying Darth Vader scene.
Yes. But again, this actually makes it wrap around and become part, because you basically see the other side of the beginning fight scene in A New Hope, where...
Well, the beginning of the chase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You see the end
true.
Of the chase.
Yeah, you see the end of the chase in New Hope, yeah.
But yeah, when the reveal of Darth Vader's lightsaber through the smoke.
Yeah.
And then just how brutal and terrifying his powers are.
Like, yes.
You never, you know, the fight choreography and the special effects in The New Hope, through Return of the Jedi, when Darth Vader was at his peak powers, right? In as far as the story goes. Could not convey, I think, what this one scene conveyed, that he is such a master of the Force in really horrendous ways it was truly terrifying. It was really fun to see Darth Vader finally being the badass that he's supposed to be.
Yeah, he is the protagonist walking through the kitchen.
Yes. Yeah, he gives no fucks.
Nope.
And
instead
his blood pressure never gets above, I don't know what.
Yeah.
120, whatever.
And he's got the force choke instead of the cheese grater.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've read a little bit of the more modern comic books.
Okay.
The Darth Vader series. Just a couple issues here and there. And what's cool about the comic books is it shows, you know, you get to sort of hear his inner monologue because it's a comic book, get to read it. So you understand like how, like what a strategist and tactician he is. But you know, he never talks in movies, and he doesn't have to, which is appropriate. So you don't get that side of him. But then when he is faced with a conflict, yeah, his powers are overwhelming.
Oh yeah.
And it's talked about in the movies but never seen. So yeah, it was really fun to get this one example. And it was brief, they didn't linger. But it was sufficiently terrifying.
This is the tragedy of Darth Maul.
Yes.
Darth Maul was a fucking badass looking guy, and they ended up with a badass looking fighting style too. I mean, don't get me wrong, like the double lightsaber thing and all that fight choreography just for Darth Maul, absolutely cool. And then A, they put him on a scooter, which looked dumb. And B, he doesn't last for, you know, very long at all in the fight. I mean, it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, Duel of the Fates, though, like a top five fight in all of the movies.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Even though it was in a, it came at the end of a very long and very bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one fight almost redeems the movie for me.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to revisit it after we get done with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Fast and Furious movies, and take on the Star Wars movies. We'll so about 2025. yeah,
you should check out. You should watch Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. I think you'd like them.
Yeah. Well, no, after this movie, I'm actually interested.
Yeah. There is a planet in The Last Jedi that is, it's beautiful, like just visually, it is amazing. It's what I thought of it when I was watching Scarif again. It's not quite as colorful, but yeah, I won't say anything more about it, but okay. It's beautiful.
Well, okay, so, and now this is where my knowledge is going to fail. So we're at the end of episode 3, where Darth Vader like loses his legs and stuff in the lava area. Is that the same place mm-hmm. where they come in, where Krennic or whatever his name is goes to visit Darth Vader and he's in the tank? Is that all the same place?
Yeah. Mustafar.
Yeah, okay. Which, by the way, I love it because Darth Vader should live in Castle Hell, which is what that looks like.
He does.
It looks beautiful. It's just like, that is what you want. That's what I want my Vader to live there. I don't want him to be like dropping the mic and like pulling down his sunglasses or whatever.
I mean, well, in fairness, he was probably extra snarky because he was pissed he had to cut his Bacta tank session short.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. Shit is important.
When you only have one limb left and you're covered in burns, those Bacta tank sessions are vital.
Yeah. Absolutely vital. Yeah, so thank you. I love this movie. It was great. I'm glad it was, you know, sort of surprised when you picked it, but I was very happy afterward.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a while. I thought I was pretty sure you would like it. I thought if there was any Star Wars movie that Jason was going to like, this would be it. Because it's a pretty self-contained story. It's not burdened down by the Skywalker mythology. And it takes some really interesting chances, like having one of its protagonists be a straight up murderer.
Yeah. Well, and it moves. Mm-hmm. It books along. You know, so yeah, you re-whetted my appetite for the Star Wars Universal. Yeah, I think I'll jump into was the Force Awakens.
Yeah,
cool. Okay, sweet. I don't have much housekeeping at this point, and probably need to let you go here. Unless you got something vital to talk about.
No, we should. We'll have a lot to talk about once Jason's on the episode with us. We can catch up on the visit and we can talk about the party and stuff.
Yeah. The very successful 50th anniversary party for Mother and Father Anderson. Yeah. They appreciated the well wishes from around the world. But we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about Dad's car.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully his watch.
Poor guy. It'll give him something to think about. That's, you know, he always got something to worry about. Be a nice distraction from the rest of the world. Things.
Yeah. What else was he going to do with his weekend?
Exactly. Yeah.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother.
to J-Bo and YouTube. Not in the creepy way. Hey!